This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode on the New Books Network. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Miranda Melcher, and I'm quite excited today, to be honest, because we get to talk about a really interesting book that on the one level is a novel about a woman and about family and about memory, and on another level is an investigation of what the last few decades have been like in China. It's a book about kind of memory more generally and sort of how people's minds work. There's a lot going on in this book titled Aftershock, newly translated into English. And I'm just going to briefly read a sort of summary blurb of the content of the novel before we get to talk to the author, Zhang Ling, who is here with us to tell us a lot more about the book. But first, to give some context, Aftershock starts in the summer of 1976 when an earthquake swallows up the city of Tangshan in China. Among the hundreds of thousands of people scrambling for survival is a mother who makes an agonizing decision that irrevocably changes her life and the lives of her children. One of those children is Xiao Deng, who 30 years later is an acclaimed writer living in Canada with a caring husband and daughter. But her newfound fame and success do little to cover the deep wounds that disrupt her life time and again. This book investigates both sides of this time period and what happens, really, both with the people's lives and in people's minds as well. So, Ling, thank you so much for being with us on the podcast to tell us about this great book.
Thank you very much, Miranda, for having me here.
Could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. My name is Zhang Ling. Zhang is my family name and Ling is my first name. In Chinese way, surname is always first, so I'm Zhang Ling. I was born and raised in southern China in a city called Wenzhou, which is approximately 500 kilometers south of Shanghai. And I moved to Canada in 1986. I've been a Toronto resident since 1994, which is a long time ago. I began to write and publish fiction in Chinese in the mid-1990s while working as a clinical audiologist to support my writing. Over the last two decades, I've published 10 novels, more than a dozen collections of novellas and short stories, and won several literary awards in the Chinese-speaking world. And some of my works, like A Single Swallow, Gold Mountain Blues, and Aftershock, have been translated into English and other languages. And Aftershock was adapted into China's first IMAX movie in 2010. English is my second language. Last year, I published my first English novel, Where Waters Meet.
Thank you for that introduction. It gives us a very good sense of just how cool it is, this book and your work generally. So can you take us back, I suppose, as you said, you've written multiple books. What gave you the idea to write about the aftermath of the Tangshan earthquake?
Well, the Tangshan earthquake in 1976 was one of the deadliest natural disasters of the 20th century. It claimed, according to the official record, it claimed more than 240,000 lives and left behind many orphans. This situation was further complicated by the tight control placed on the media at the time, as it was during the Cultural Revolution. So even years later, we still feel we don't know the full truth of what really happened in Tangshan. And I belonged to a generation brought up to admire strength and despise sort of weakness and tears. You know? And the stoicism was pretty much the only way we were taught in school and in our family to handle suffering and losses. So 3 decades later, after the earthquake, I mean, in 2006, as I looked back at the event from Toronto, I just was convinced that many Tangshan earthquake survivors, especially the orphaned children, had not had a chance to grieve their losses properly. That's one of the initial thoughts that drove me to write about them. And then in the same year of the earthquake, I mean, 1976, several major events took place in China, which in a sense recharted my course of life and helped to shape me into the person I am today. In that year, 3 most prominent state leaders in China, Zhu De, Zhou Enlai, and Chairman Mao Zedong, all died within a few months of each other, which marked the ending of Mao's regime and the Cultural Revolution. So as a result, China started to adopt some sort of an open-door policy, which gave me the opportunity to write the exam to enter college. By the way, I was a child labor sort of factory worker, you know, then. And then eventually gave me the opportunity to leave for Canada. So it's not an exaggeration to say that 1976 marks the turning point of my own life. So I have always felt the urge to write about the earthquake and the events of that year.
That's a lot of good reasons that it would stick in your mind and be interesting to write about. And as you said, you're not alone in that generation. There were a lot of people for whom 1975-1976 was so impactful. So what was the original reception of the novella like when you published it? Is it what you expected?
Good question. The novella was published in January 2007 in one of China's best-known literary journals, People's Literature, 人民文学. Prior to that, I had already published a few things, but was still kind of unknown. The manuscript was a surprise to the editor of the journal. There have been many works written about the 1976 earthquake, but the editor noted that none has been written from the perspective of an earthquake orphan. So he felt it was something fresh and unique. So the novella made its appearance in the journal very quickly and soon attracted the attention of critics. It's a surprise, yet not entirely a surprise. As I mentioned before, I had written a few things before that. So I kind of knew sooner or later one of my pieces would catch some attention. But of course, the movie was a surprise. Aftershock remains my best known work. Since then, I've written quite a few more books, you know, winning several awards. But people today would still introduce me, in China at least, as the author of Aftershock.
Well, one of the reasons for that is, as you mentioned, becoming a film. So when and how did you find out that it was going to be a film? Were you involved with it becoming a film? What did you think when you sat and watched it?
Well, very shortly after the publication of the novella, several Top Gun Chinese movie directors approached me for film rights, including the formidable Zhang Yimou, Wu Tianming, and Feng Xiaogang. Among them, Feng Xiaogang was the most persistent one, so he got the rights. But as far as the movie is concerned, I was not the screenwriter, but at one point, I was invited to accompany the film crew to New Zealand, which was then considered one of the potential sites for some of the scenes, the international scenes. But unfortunately, due to the budget constraints, the director eventually decided to abandon the overseas scenes. So in that sense, I would say I was not much involved in the film adaptation. And the first time I watched the film was at the Toronto International Film Festival 2010. In fact, I presented a movie to the audience as the rest of the crew was occupied with other projects. So it's my first experience having my work presented in a movie form. And it's not just any movie, you know, it's China's first IMAX. So it's just, I would say, surreal watching it in one of the largest theaters in Toronto with a fully packed audience. Of course, the plots and the characters have gone through many changes, and it's very different from the original novella. Though the novella was a bit dark, but the movie was warm and uplifting. I was feeling both emotional and detached. At the same time, and it was a very mixed feeling of pride and humility, you know. So many different thoughts were just running through my mind, and I couldn't quite put my finger on how I felt.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's rather a lot going on at once. I guess I want to ask about the next step in the process. As you said, it started as a novella, then became this massive IMAX film. And of course, the book that I've just read is the full novel. How did you go about adapting and extending the initial novella into the full novel?
Well, even today, I don't even know whether I've done the right thing. the IMAX movie became an instant box office hit. And as a result, I gained a fair bit of new readers. I started to receive feedback from the readers, and many of them felt that novella had left out a lot of information, especially about the life of the extended family members after the earthquake, who didn't get enough exposure in the original story due to the space limitation. So that sort of prompted me to think about a possible expansion. 2 years later, after the release of the movie, I published a book-length version of Aftershock, which gave me the opportunity to explore in more detail the life of Xiao Deng's mother, her brother, her sister-in-law, and even the adoptive father. It was an experience that I probably won't repeat in the future. I feel like now I'm older and wiser, hopefully. Today, I'll probably focus more on creating something new from scratch instead of working or reworking an old project. But at the time, publishing a full-length book made sense from a practical perspective, as it could sell its international rights more easily than a novella. So at least that was what I believed back then.
Can you tell us a bit more about that process, especially, I suppose, the research side of writing the full novel, particularly given the time period that at least a lot of it is set, if we're talking about China in the late 1970s, the 1980s, the 1990s, what was it like to kind of look back at that time period from a research perspective? Was it challenging? Were there opportunities that you found?
Wow, this is a very, very good question. I find myself really have a lot to talk about. The parts about life in late 70s and 80s, or even part of the 90s, were relatively easy for me to write about, as I had lived through some of it myself. And some of my own extended family members had quit their state-controlled jobs and started their own business adventures during this particular period. So their stories provided me with a sort of plenty of raw materials and inspiration when I wrote about the life of Xiao Deng's family in China after the earthquake. In addition, by that time, China had begun to open up to the rest of the world, which made information more accessible from overseas, as I live in Toronto, you know. The hardest part of my research was definitely the earthquake itself. As I mentioned before, it occurred at the tail end of the Cultural Revolution, and there was very tight control of information, and the foreign press was not allowed near the scene at the time. Besides, it was way before the digital age, and there was hardly any electronically recorded or reserved history other than the official state version of the events. And my usual method of doing field trips had become almost pointless in this case, as the old city of Tangshan was pretty much wiped out from the earthquake, or by the earthquake, and the new city, which was built like a number of years later, was located some distance away from the original site. So there's no point for me to visit there. There's nothing there, you know. So I had to rely almost exclusively on reading memoirs of the event and tracking down any witnesses I could find within my budget. You know, I had a very small purse. Luckily, there are a number of survivors who live in Toronto, so their recollections of the event really helped me to describe in detail the disaster itself and the rescue efforts of the soldiers and the citizens, you know.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
That's really interesting. I wouldn't have necessarily guessed that that was the hardest part to research, but of course, it makes a lot of sense when you explain it. So thank you for taking us through your process a bit. Is there anything in that time of researching the book or even writing the full version of it that maybe, I mean, I asked you about challenges, but was there anything that surprised you?
A lot of surprises and challenges for sure. I mean, the funding part was the major one as well, but I'm not going to go into that. I'm the type of author who gets more inspired by images than by words and texts. So writing a story like Aftershock, I naturally would like to find photos that can restore and replay the scene for me. I remember some years ago, I visited Pompeii in Italy and was blown away by the way the city was preserved, you know, the infrastructure, the artworks, and the social life at the time of the volcanic eruption. And it's like a snapshot of history frozen right before your eyes, you know. The most striking thing for me during the visit was the mummified victims who wrapped their own bodies around their children while breathing their last. It was a haunting image that stayed with me for a long time, allowing me to recreate in my mind the life, the death, the desire, and the last hope of the people of Pompeii at the time. But I didn't have the same kind of luck when I was doing my research for Aftershock. Of course, to be fair, it was almost two decades ago, and technology has advanced so much since then. There might have been new information emerging, but then I could not find any pictures that captured the victims and the survivors. And for sure, there were pictures of severely damaged roads, crumbled buildings and bridges, and the PRA soldiers' rescue efforts and things like that. They were all a great display of bravery, courage, and heroism. But I kind of expect more, and I'm a little greedy. I desire to see a complete spectrum of facts that would include the dead, the sad, the vulnerable, and emotionally crushed, which I couldn't find, at least when I was writing the novella. It really amazed me, put it this way, that a disaster of this scale had left no picture of the victims. Isn't it something? The other thing that has surprised me, I think it's a wrong word, I would rather say amazed me, is the overwhelming material support from ordinary citizens all over China. I've never really doubted their kindness and compassion, and Chinese people have always been known for their readiness to help each other in times of need. But at the time, China was a very poor country, and most of the daily necessities were strictly rationed. We talk about rice, flour, cooking oil, sugar, coal, laundry soap, fabric, you name it. I lived through this period, so I know the details of it firsthand. Therefore, any donation made to Tangshan at the time would be literally from the mouth of you and your children. So it reminds me of the story of a poor widow's penny from the Bible. So this kind of generosity and self-sacrifice has really moved me to tears.
Wow, those are both some incredibly powerful experiences around this. So thank you very much for sharing it. If I can kind of continue asking about the process of development of this book, we've talked about writing the novella, going from the novella to the film, from the film to the full novel. Of course, the version I read most recently is the English translation. What's that process and experience been like for you?
This book, together with a more recent novel, A Single Swallow, was translated into English by the same translator, Shirley Bryant. And Shirley is a writer herself, so she has a deep understanding of what's involved in creating a good translation. As far as I'm concerned, I was more involved in the editorial process than the translation itself. The translator, the editor, and the author needed to discuss issues such as how to clarify some background information and culture-specific concepts and situations for English readers. And Shelley doesn't like the idea of footnotes, which I totally agree with. We both feel the insertion of footnotes in a novel might impede and interrupt the flow of narration. Then we had to find ways to weave a background information as seamlessly as possible into the body of the story, which meant sometimes I needed to rework certain passages. So the English edition of Aftershock was published more than a decade later after the release of the movie and the Chinese book. So it's been a very long wait, but I feel it's worthwhile. I'm just glad that I can finally share my account of this event with an international audience who may or may not be quite familiar with this part of modern Chinese history.
Well, so in fact, speaking of that, the wider audience the book is now available to, what do you hope readers take away from the book?
Well, earthquakes cannot be effectively predicted and diverted by science even today. So in certain cases, science still can help. But the earthquake that occurred in Tangshan was especially devastating, as it was compounded by other factors, such as extreme poverty and a harsh political environment at the time, which unfortunately prevented international relief from reaching Tangshan. If this earthquake had happened in a different time and place, many more lives could have been saved. It's not hard to imagine the severe long-term psychological effects on the children who lived through the disaster. So these children were born and raised in the era of revolution, and from birth, they were taught to be strong and not to display signs of fear and vulnerability. And they haven't had a chance to grieve their losses properly. And some carry the scars into their adult lives. Then in 2008, another major earthquake occurred in Wenchuan, Sichuan province. This is a different era. And China has gone through major changes. Information traveled much more easily than it could in 1976. And the issue of PTSD and psychological intervention was brought to public attention. So I'm just glad that Aftershock is one of the earliest literary works in China that addressed this issue. So the disaster itself can be more easily identified, as it has a beginning and an end. But the lingering effects of trauma are more elusive, less clear-cut, and oftentimes just conveniently overlooked. If anything, I would hope the readers of Aftershock would be made more aware of the lingering effects and the mental impacts of any traumatic events.
Thank you for sharing that. We've talked about a number of aspects about the book and your process, and I don't want to give away the plot, so I won't ask further questions for listeners who haven't had the chance to read it yet, but I will ask a final question. You mentioned, obviously, this is one of many books you've written, not even necessarily your most recent in some ways. Is there anything you're currently working on or any future projects that you'd like to briefly tell us a little bit about?
Sure, without giving away, like you said, the concrete details. Over the last 8 years, I have completed the first two parts of my Children of War trilogy. And the first part is A Single Swallow, translated into English by Shelley Bryant, the same translator who translated Aftershock, which was released in 2020. And the second part is my first English book, Where Waters Meet, which was released last May. So naturally, my long-term plan is to complete the third and the final part of the trilogy. And I'm currently working on the research part of it. And also recently, I've been captivated by the rapid advancement in AI technology, humanoid robotics, and the brain-computer interface, and crazy things like that. So currently I'm working on a soft sci-fi novella exploring the possibility of humans and machines complementing each other and living in harmony. Let's just wait and see.
Yes, no, definitely let's wait and see. Those both sound fascinating. So thank you for the sneak preview. And of course, while you work on both of them, listeners, whether in Chinese or now in English, can of course read Aftershock because it is now available in English. So very exciting. Thank you so much, Ling, for being with us on the podcast to tell us all about it.
Thank you so much, Miranda, for having me. We really have had a wonderful conversation and I really enjoyed it.